Welcome to Story and Rain Talks, the Story and Rain magazine podcast. I'm Tamara Rapa, founder, editor-in-chief, and your host. Join me here as we dive deep and go behind the scenes with creatives from all fields, exploring the origins for game-changing ideas and careers, and so much more. It's our expert curation of conversations with those who are pushing culture forward, and we're inviting you to get inside the story. Take a ride through the actor's life and listen to our latest episode. Lily Rabe, who can currently be seen both in David E. Kelly's Love and Death on HBO Max and on Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, is the daughter of prolific playwright David Rabe and celebrated actress Jill Clayburgh. And we begin our conversation with her childhood spent near the stage, watching the world's greatest talent in rehearsals for her father's masterpiece, Hurley Burley. Lily was bitten by the performance bug early on. We discuss her time as a dancer and how that turned to acting, life at Northwestern and her very fancy degree, and how life almost imitated art when she played a restaurant-employed actor for the film No Reservations. She describes why her heart belongs to theater and the religious experience that is performing Shakespeare in the Park. We discuss being a part of the Ryan Murphy American Horror Story family, and in a quick fire round, Lily talks playing Liz Cheney, the sheer joy she felt during The Undoing, why George Clooney is the happiest person, and why her role in his The Tender Bar opposite Ben Affleck was a favorite, and why George and Ben are too. We discuss crafting the complicated relationship her character Meg has with Harrison Ford's Paul in Shrinking, and we talk in detail about why embodying Betty Gore for Love and Death sometimes meant taking her home with her, for better or for worse. Having worked with her husband Hamish over many years, Lily tells us why co-directing the soon-to-be-released film Downtown Owl whet their appetites for much more. And on the subject of more, Lily tells us why she's feeling so fulfilled. So we'll simply take some more of that, please. We touch on Presumed Innocent, ahead for her on Apple TV Plus and co-starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Ruth Negga. We talk about how paying attention to saying no helped build her brilliant career and why she looks to feel compelled to play a part. And lastly, Lily shares her great taste with a long list of her most favorite obsessions. I hope you love my conversation with everyone's favorite, truly, Lily Rabe, just as much as I do.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Your bookshelf is so beautiful. It's just like,
thank you.
Everything about it.
It's funny. It used to be black lacquer, and it kind of felt a little dark and sad in here. And I was like, let me just go crazy and paint it like the craziest color ever.
I love it. But then all the books, this is like,
thank you. Yeah. I'm surrounded by books right now in all places.
So relaxing.
Yes, I agree. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Let's get right into it.
Great.
Starting at the beginning.
Great.
You have deeply creative roots. Your father is the prolific playwright David Rabe, and your mother was celebrated actor Jill Clayburgh. What are your very first memories, Lily, of being raised within an atmosphere of creativity and artistry in New York?
Well, at a very young age, and I think I've maybe given this anecdote in an interview before, but
okay,
but it's a good one, so I'll do it again.
Okay, yeah, we want to hear it. I want to hear it.
My dad directed production of Hurley Burley. I think it was in 1985, so I was very, very young. And it was a production in LA. We should like look at the cast, because there were so many people did Hurley Burley, and I can't remember what, but it was like,
yes, I know. I did look it up.
And Sean Penn, and like, it's just, it's wild.
Like Sean Penn was in the film version.
He was also had done the play though. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back and take a look at all the.
We all should the, look at, because there was the one Mike Nichols did one, you know, it was on Broadway, yeah, in New York, and Cynthia Nixon very famously was running back and forth between that. And she was also doing Thomas Harper's The Real Thing and on Broadway. And she would like run and somehow make both curtain calls. It's like
amazing.
Just the dreamiest, most romantic actor.
What a story.
But I sat in the aisle with him during rehearsal, watching the play. He's like really big. He's like this big, tall dude. And I just remember sitting there in that theater, in the dark theater. It must have been like Tech or something. And feeling simultaneously, I mean, I was really so young. So it's like probably I was having whatever thought I was having and couldn't begin to articulate it.
Right.
But I think when I think of it, because it is one of those memories, like I can see it when I close my eyes. I can see it out of my, the way those early childhood memories are. They're like these flashes, but they really get in there.
That's right. Right.
And the way it kind of hits me is like it felt simultaneously exactly right and normal. And this is my life. This is my childhood. My father who loves me is sitting next to me and he's doing his work that he loves. But also this feels wild because I'm sitting in a dark room watching these guys say all these things that I know are, you know, like all this terrible language.
Way beyond the 10-year-old, right. Anything a 10-year-old should hear like on a regular basis. Right.
So something felt heightened about it too, I guess is almost like that feels like the right word. Like, oh, this is just more than what I'm experiencing when I go to like my music class or whatever.
Right.
But so that's just an early memory, but really what I remember is that my parents were very passionate about what they did. They loved what they did and it was their job. My mom went it's sort of an unusual thing that I was sitting in the aisle at that young age because my mom did go out of her, she made a very concerted effort to keep my childhood as sort of sheltered from Hollywood and all of that as possible. And she turned down a ton of work. She was kind of at the height of her career.
Yeah.
Came along and she started just turning things down. She had no regrets about it later when we would talk about it. I mean, we weren't talking about it at the time, but then when I became a grown-up, I was like, oh gosh, mom, do you
and started acting yourself, right?
Right. Do you wish you hadn't? And she's like, I don't regret anything because I had all this, I was there. But she wasn't, you know, this has become a very long answer. But there's so much to say about it. She also wasn't like, that's the way you have to do it. And when you have kids, you have to do it that way. You can keep working, keep doing what you love. But she, for whatever reason, did want to just take a big, big break. And she did. And so all of my memories, my childhood memories, my mother is there. I mean, I'm sure once in a while she was, but I just remember her always being there.
I too went to Villanova like your father.
No way.
I did. And it's actually very random. I mean, I applied to like 17 schools. I was all over the map. Somehow ended up at Villanova.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 I'm from New York City. Going to Villanova was a very, you know, I went to an international school here in New York City. I went to this school called the United Nations International School. And then ended up at Villanova. And I studied English. I was an English major.
You were?
Oh, yeah. I studied.
I can't wait to tell my dad.
Yeah, I studied. I was an English major and I minored in French and Russian because I had taken those languages in New York school at my international school. But I loved the English program there.
He had written because he'd been to Vietnam and then he'd submitted the play. Like he'd never even, I don't think, been to New York, or if he had as a tourist, you know, but he was like, he was from Iowa and he had sent the plays to Joe Papp, one or two of the Vietnam plays. And he tells this story about like Joe Papp leaving him a message while he was at Villanova, you know, on a answering machine.
You're reminding me now that one of the English professors I had was a war hero. And we had read a very famous book about war, It'll Come to Me, by, I believe, somebody he was friends with or knew.
Oh, wow.
It's on my bookshelf. I can't remember what it is. It'll come to me. But I
if it doesn't, while we're on together and you, when you,
I remember, will
you send it to me.
He was one
I
of my,
ask my dad about it.
You should. I'll find out for you. But skipping ahead in your life, you went to Northwestern.
I did.
But you also studied dance for many years.
Yeah.
Did you study dance in college? And how would your interest in the performing arts go from dance to acting?
I think dance was my way towards acting, which I didn't know, of course, consciously at the time. I I started dancing at a very young age. It was completely self-motivated. My mom would take me to the ballet. That was something that we would do. But I don't think she, you know, she didn't have any kind of agenda for me to then do it anything more than like taking a ballet class if I thought it was fun locally. But I became completely obsessed with ballet, wanted to take class, really, you know, became a proper bunhead. Like I was I was going from school, going from school every day to, she was driving me 45 minutes or an hour, I don't know how she did it, to where I was dancing because it was the best school. So what, this is once we'd moved out of the city. I started in the city, then we moved out of the city and I was driving to Stamford, which was like a drive from where we lived, to dance. This woman, Allegra Kent, who had been with the New York City Ballet, had started this school there. And I was going, you know, every day from school and doing my bun in the car and getting into my leotard, running into class. And I was in love with it. I was in love with it. And I think the discipline, the escape, the relationship to music, the relationship to your body, the, you know, I was pretty shy as a kid. I still am in my way, absolutely. And it was just a way for me to express myself and communicate. And, but I really did love that discipline was very attractive to me. And then I loved performing in that way. Like I loved getting on stage as a dancer. And so then later, I do carry it with me. I carry it with me all the time.
I can see it. And so in college, what did you study?
So by college, that was sort of in high school, you know, because when you're dancing, it's like you're really faced with, not that you can't go to college and dance, but you.
It's this big commitment. It's this way of life, as I was saying, right?
Yes. Like, am I going to go?
Am I really going to do this?
Am I really going to do this? You're sort of, you really have to kind of focus on that make that decision at a pretty young age. And I, at that point I was loving writing. I loved my amazing English teacher in high school. I started teaching dance, taking class less. I was like teaching at this local, kind of, you know, ballet arts school once a week or something to kind of keep scratching the itch. But, and then I started, and then when I stopped, I really did have this kind of like vacancy. And then I started auditioning for the school plays. And, by the time I was applying to college, I was focused on, I knew I wanted to be a theater major, or like a double major with English or whatever. And Northwestern was really unique at the time.
What a great school, right?
But it's an amazing school. And I don't know if it's changed tremendously since I was there, or if there are more schools who are doing what Northwestern was doing, but it was like, you could have this kind of conservatory experience, but still be in a liberal arts.
Like proper liberal arts.
Yes.
Curriculum and setting.
Yeah, with like a core curriculum. But you have this, like, I think I have like a Bachelor of Science in theater, which I always love because I don't really know what that means, but
it's very cool though. Yeah.
It makes me feel like I have a.
That sounds extra fancy.
It's extra fancy. But Northwestern was amazing because it was very intensive in the theater because there were no grad students. You get cast in all the parts. You're not competing. Like there were grad directors and grad designers and things, but no grad actors. So you got to play. Like I did the real thing and I played Annie, and I'm sure I would have never been cast if I were, you know, competing against grad students to get that part. So, and I did Closer. I think that's Anna. I only played parts that were Annie. Or Anna. but yeah. It was great. I loved Northwestern.
In 2007, you caught my eye in the film No Reservations, opposite Catherine Zeta-Jones, Aaron Eckhart, Patricia Clarkson, At that point, you'd also appeared in the film Mona Lisa Smile and a couple of other films. It's funny, you know, I'm thinking about in No Reservations, you're a waitress, you're a server who's an actor. And there's a scene where she's rehearsing her lines in the walk-in. Like, how meta. What was life like for you in those early days as an actor?
Well, so I, instead of waiting tables to make money when I was auditioning, when I first got to New York, I worked as a nanny for two different...
like the Nanny Diaries.
Yeah. So I was... And for whatever reason, my babysitting niche became twins, which I think it just happened because like I was working. I know.
She specializes in twins.
I'm totally unqualified for that. But I, you know how it is. Like I worked for this one family. They were twins. They knew this other family with twins. And then one was on the Upper East Side. One was in the West Village. So different. And it was great. But that's how that's what I was doing. So I didn't know how to waitress. So
I didn't either. And I did it. And I was a bad one.
But leading up to it, I wish I could remember the name of the restaurant. I remember exactly where it was, but I like shadowed for a while. Yeah. In the evening.
Okay. Which we have to figure this out. Where, what part of town was it?
It's Soho. And oh my God, it's like a water something or it's got something.
Aqua Grill.
It might've been Aqua Grill. I was just going to say something aquatic in the title.
It's been there forever. That's probably true. It's not anymore. Yeah. It's closed down. It's crazy. It's on the corner of Sixth Avenue and Spring Street.
That's it.
Aqua Grill. Okay.
And they would invite me and they were actually really fantastic. They would let me come sit at the dinner that they would have. Cause we had those dinners too in the movie.
In the movie. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. They would let me come sit at their dinner where they would like talk about the, you know, try have what they were having and talk about specials and do the whole thing. And then I would shadow this waiter, like as if I were going to be working at the restaurant. And so hopefully, but you know, I think her name was Bernadette. Wasn't like the most excellent waitress either. If I remember, she was fine. But she wasn't getting a Bachelor of Science.
Right.
Waitressing skills, I don't think.
Theater, you've done a ton of theater. It was even earlier than this that you were nominated for a Drama Desk Award for your role in Steel Magnolias. You were also nominated for both a Tony and a Drama Desk Award for your work in The Merchant of Venice. How do you feel about your work on the stage? Can you describe your relationship with it?
It's my whole heart. Well, it's not my whole heart. I have a lot of things in my heart, but it takes up a lot of real estate in there. I love the theater so much. I ache for it. I miss it. I haven't done a play since I started having kids, which was not a conscious choice that I was going to start one thing and stop doing theater, but it's just kind of, it is what happened. And I feel so excited to do a play again now on the other side of having three kids, four with my stepdaughter. I'm really ready to go back. We were just talking, we're going to New York for a couple of weeks and we were just sort of, we have like these few precious nights where we can go see things. And we were just making our wish list together.
What is on your wish list, Lily? I'm curious. Well,
the Stoppard.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack O'Brien has done this play Shucked that, you know, Jack is which I hear is like fantastic. And Jack is incredibly dear to us. So we have to see that. And then we have a couple others that we're going to sort of, I guess, I don't know, draw straws. Cause I think we only can see three things. And then I'm taking my daughter to Wicked.
Of course.
So I
have must four, do. Like,
including matinees, I have four spaces, one TBD.
Four precious spaces.
Yeah. But I, you know, the theater going, it's like also because I was in New York for so many years and it's just what I would do. Like we would just go to TKTS and see what we could get a ticket for the night of. And I miss that. And I miss being on stage so much. I particularly miss the Delacorte. I miss doing Shakespeare in the Park so much.
Oh, how incredible.
just the, it's like, I knew as I was doing it how amazing it was, but I've only realized more and more being away from it just how incredible it is.
Right.
It's sort of like, it does feel kind of like a religious it's experience of some kind. I mean, it's just, it's so profound being able to say those words with no roof over
I would either. Imagine. I would imagine. I want to switch gears just for a second and talk about Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. I'd read that you are one of only three actors to appear in the show's first six seasons. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I'm, well, no, I don't know if it's the first six. I know I'm one of three who've done nine of the total, I think.
With so much experience with the franchise, what details can you share about the vibe and the process and what it's like both to work with Ryan and on the series themselves?
Well, it's a great segue to talk about the being on that show after talking about the theater, because of course it's different medium, all those things that make it different are apparent, but the thing that is so wonderful, there are so many things that are wonderful about it, but my favorite thing about it is that it does feel like this kind of acting troupe. And you're coming back to so many familiar faces, not just the actors, the crew, the directors, the, you know, camera operators, the costume designer, you know, it's like, you just get this shorthand with so many of the people. And then it's very exciting when someone new comes in, or if you, you know, are gone and then come back for a season or whatever. It's just like, it does have this feeling of sort of a creative home. And it's so wonderful getting to play all those different parts.
Lily, so many people I know, you know, myself included, are such fans of your work. Your body of work is rich and it's vast. And there's a unique quality to it. You've made a certain kind of mark in the way that you've built your body of work. Having excellent taste and recognizing excellent stories driven by excellent talent probably has some huge part to do with it. How do you pick and choose your projects? And what have you kind of said no to?
One of my first agents said to me, you know, like when I was 20, your no's are just important as your yeses. And at that point, I'm like, I just want a job, like any job. Right. I'm just like,
you're like, let me just check that. Just file that away for a minute, but noted. Right.
But noted. But I think, you know, it did. I did absorb it in some way, and I certainly come back to it. And I'm able to, when my friends call me for advice, I always am able to give that advice. It is hard when you love to work to say no to things, but it is so important. And I guess the answer to your question is it has changed for me the way I choose. Like it's constantly evolving, the sort of process that I go through, or the way that I choose my next project. And there are always logistics that come into play too, but logistics aside, because I am a believer that if you want to play a part badly enough, you want to do a job badly enough, you can make it work. You know, let's go back to Cynthia Nixon was doing two Broadway plays at the same time.
Right. Like, right. She made it work
on paper, right. But she, with the support of whomever, made that work. So I do believe that, you know, even with kids and even with whatever, like if you get some amazing movie with a director you want to work with in part, you have to play, and it shoots in Bulgaria, like you figure it out. And Hamish has the same philosophy about it, so I'm very lucky in that, because we can then you know, work together to make it possible. But it is really, I'm not very good at knowing whether something will be a hit or successful. Like I don't know how to really assess that.
Right.
But I do know, I think I'm clearer now than ever before when I read something. If I just feel that kind of like total compulsion to play the part, because it's different than loving a part. I've read things where I love it, but I just don't feel, and it's not that I can't imagine how to play the part or why I would want to. It just doesn't hit me in that same place where it feels like a compulsion, like something I just
have. So interesting. Yeah.
And I think I've just gotten, as I sort of, you know, I mean, you just do get better at like being who you are. I think
your instincts get sharper, right? You're like, I have a compulsion for this. I like this, but I have a compulsion to do this.
Yeah. Right. And I think the noise, the rest, or at least for me, the noise that got in the way sometimes of me connecting to that clarity, like I think I probably always had it, but then there was just noise that would make it harder for me to feel clarity about. And now it's like just a little quieter, or I'm just better at quieting that other stuff and really knowing. But I do sometimes do that thing where I'll just spend a day saying, you've decided to do this, and like see how my body feels. And then I'll say like, okay, I'm passing. And then if I'm just like, feel like I'm going to vomit, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not going to pass.
That's really great advice. I want to get specific and talk about a handful of your projects in a bit of a quick fire moment where you can share maybe some behind the scenes memories from each of these. George Clooney's The Tender Bar.
Oh my gosh. That was one of the most joyous filming experiences I've had because of George and because of Ben. Everyone was amazing, but they are and have stayed. They really...
You were so fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I loved playing that part so much. I was so happy during that shoot. And, you know, there's something like I have played a lot of parts where I'm in a, you know, the character is in like a lot of distress.
Crisis.
there's a lot. And there was certainly hurdles, but she had this amazing optimism. That was so wonderful to just be with. And George has that. George is a really happy person. He is happy.
We need more of the more happy people.
He is a happy person who makes other people happy. And it's real and it's true and it's deep and it's authentic and it's earned and it's all of those things. And so as a leader, you just feel that. And Ben is one of the most wonderful actors I've worked with. He is one of the smartest people I've ever met. He's so curious about everything. And he's just electric to be around. So it was, and that part felt, I don't know, she was just really in my heart. And I think about her all the time. So I really loved that one.
How about playing Liz Cheney in Vice?
Gosh, what an arc she's had, right? I mean,
that's what I was thinking and reflecting upon that, right?
I know, it's wild.
It's wild.
Adam, he's such a great, I was such a fan of Adam's before doing that. And we had like almost worked together on something. I can't remember, was it? Anyway, but I just wanted to work with him so badly. I thought the script was so amazing. Christian and Amy were so incredible. But it was, I loved playing that part, but it was hard because, well, for all the reasons you can imagine.
All the reasons.
Yeah. And I think playing the Liz Cheney that I am familiar with now would feel different than playing the Liz Cheney that I was playing in that, you know, at that time. Cause we have more information about her, and she's become who she's become. Like she's evolving. But what I loved about Adam is he just gives you so much freedom and But he's so clear and specific at the same time. So you really can be, you just can really be brave, which is, mm-hmm. which is all I ever want to be. But, he really creates so much space for that. And I find him so brave. I love his filmmaking.
We loved you in David E. Kelly's The Undoing as Sylvia, opposite Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. What was that like? The ultimate Upper East Side.
It's like I'm having so many joyful memories right now. Listen, we shot the bulk of that during the spring. The cherry blossoms were blooming. I got to go to New York and play this part that was so much fun to play. And what with that part, you know, Susanna Beer, maybe it was that I'd done a reading with Adam, and this is the same thing. I had done a reading of a film that never got made with Susanna when I was like a million months pregnant. And then with my first, and then I can't remember how old she was but she was like young when we made The Undoing, and she came with us. And of course, but Susanna, I've sort of gone on a detour, sorry. I was imagining being in the cherry blossoms with my young daughter.
Distracted by the cherry blossoms.
Yeah, sorry. But when I read this, I think I can't remember how many I had, but I was sent like maybe three of them and I couldn't put it down. But there wasn't as much of Sylvia on the page as there ended up being. And Susanna called me and just said, listen, just say yes, just play the part. I promise you we're going to make it, you know, if you play this part, it's going to be something great. And I'm going to let you.
And it was.
Soar. And I'm going to, and she did it. Like she just, I had such a long lead. Like and we were writing, she was writing things like on my first day, we were just rolling and Sylvia became this whole other thing. And I really, so that was such an example of kind of doing a trust fall with someone who you haven't worked with, but just have a really strong instinct about. And also I was such a fan of her work, but she really did it where she made it into this kind of, it was such a wonderful thing. And it ended up being such a great part. Nicole's so wonderful to work with, and Hugh, and it was an amazing group. And we also had these European out, you know, we were like wrapped by, I could go see a play every night. It was
fun.
It was really fun. But I went and I worked again with Susanna. I would work again and again with her. She's remarkable.
Now let's, of course, talk about Shrinking, which I loved. It's currently streaming on Apple TV Plus by Jason Segel. You play Harrison Ford's daughter, his character, Paul's daughter, Meg. What did you take with you from playing Meg? I love how complex their relationship is and how you played that complexity.
Thank you. I'm so glad that worked out. I was offered that when I was editing this movie and Hamish was running back and forth shooting something. And Bill Lawrence called me and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I want to do this, but I don't know how I'm going to do this. And he said, well, we'll just, you know, if you can give us this many days and we'll spread it out. They totally made it work with my schedule. And it was, you know, in my backyard, it was like right here in LA. I wanted to work with Bill so badly. I'm such a fan. And I think Jason and Harrison are just amazing. And I mean, of course, but they're really, I didn't know either one of them and they're so wonderful. Jason is like, you know, he is one of those guys where everyone who's worked with him is like, he's the greatest guy. And you sort of think it can't be real, but it's real. And Harrison, we had very wonderful and quick chemistry. I think we had a really quick mutual trust. And, you know, because of it's a half hour show and there's a lot of relationships and I think we both kind of knew, not that we talked about it explicitly, but we both knew we had to, we wouldn't have a lot of time to really show what the relationship was, and not show, but
make people feel what was happening between
them. Tell their story as fully as we could. And I think we both just were very aligned in how we wanted to get there. So I loved it. It was great. And he's so funny, Harrison. I mean, really, I laughed a lot too on that set.
Also streaming right now, you're in Love and Death, also from David E. Kelly. And I'm thinking about how you shed a role, right? Like, someone like Betty Gore, who is, we're talking about, characters in crisis. I mean, she's a tortured soul. She's a recipient of a gruesome murder. Is there a process that you have for, going about the business of being Lily Rabe when you're playing characters like this one?
It's a great question. And I needed it more than ever with this one. But I was probably less successful than other times in terms of being able to shed her sort of while it was happening. I mean, listen, of course, when you have kids, it's like, you have kids. Jesse and I would always talk about this. They don't care what you're carrying around from your day at work. They,
right.
And nor should they. So that's always that's always the sort of primary thing. But I will say that with Betty, I really, she was so with me through the shoot. I wasn't sort of coming home from work and able to kind of
switch gears,
that I could totally switch gears. And of course I would, in the way that I needed to, of course, but it was, she was, she was really like in my skin. And I really, even after, wrapping, it took me a minute. It really did take me a minute. And I sometimes don't want to let someone go. I needed to let her go. I did need to let her go, but I felt so protective of her. That was an interesting one. I mean, it's like a longer conversation, but I don't sort of have like, oh, this is my process for each one, because I think I feel differently at the end of every one.
Yeah.
In terms of like, how much of this person can I kind of afford to take with me? And sometimes you really do have to kind of really make an effort to let go and say goodbye. And that can be hard.
In Love and Death, you're playing a character whose real story is widely known. Yet what I love the most is all the nuances of personality that you bring to Betty and to her relationship with her husband, played by Jesse Plemons. How did you decide what you'd portray in her?
You know, something that David Kelly and I talked about, and Leslie, before I even had said yes, I think it was like when they were first talking to me about the part, was this sort of, it's like this pervasive and relentless lack of safety that she feels.
Right.
And I was so interested in that.
Right. Right.
That she is, she's come from, they're a transplant. They're from Kansas. And in Kansas, her life had, she was like a golden girl. She was really, from everything I know, from everything I'm able to know, she had a kind of an ease in her life that goes away. And I was so interested in investigating how that happened, because it's not like she became a different person. She's the same person. It's part of her, you know, it's, they're both her. So if she was this girl who was like known for her smile and had a million Valentines and was voted the most likely to succeed and had, and then is in this situation where people are sort of handling her and making her feel like she's paranoid and, how did she get there and what could have helped her? Because she's right about so much of it, you know, so much of her, this feeling of things are not okay is right. Even if she's not naming the thing that's not okay, she's not, you know, you can't just dismiss it as a kind of paranoia or hypochondria with her health things, or, you know, it's all, there's like, everything is based in some reality. And I really wanted to investigate that and tell that part of her story. That felt so important to me. And that's why I wanted to play the part.
It's incredibly exciting that you co-directed Downtown Owl with your husband. Directorial debuts for the both of you, is that correct?
It is.
And it's making its debut at Tribeca Film Festival next month.
Yeah.
An adaptation of Chuck Klosterman's novel. It's got a great cast, Ed Harris, Henry Golding, Vanessa Hudgens, Finn Wittrock. How did working with your husband in this way evolve your relationship? You talked a little earlier about, you know, being in a partnership with someone else who is, you know, shares a lot of the same interests and back and even creative background and comes from a creative family, you know, family of artists. How did it evolve your relationship to work on this project together?
We love working together. We have always loved working together. We've played all these, you know, we've done all these Shakespeare plays together. We've done TV together. We've done movies together. And we just continue to seek it out. But this was, of course, a huge risk. It's always a risk. This was like a massive risk because we would be directing for the first time together. We had a very tiny baby when we did it. I was pregnant really up until shooting. It was, that's a whole other hour also, but I loved directing with him so much. I loved being directed by him because I play a big part in the movie as well. And you know, he's someone who, when we were, and this is why I had a hunch that it would go well, but of course you don't know, but you know, when we would act together, and I remember my mother and I used to have this, outside of your director. And so listen, sometimes you have a director you don't need. You're like, I'm getting all the notes I need from this one person. But often you would love someone, some trusted eye to come in, give you, you know, watch previews, give you some notes. But it's really hard to find people who will actually be honest with you and have a point of view. And I mean, they might have a point of view, but they might not actually give it to you. And so it's like this precious thing when you find someone who you know will actually tell you the truth. My mom used to say that to me when she went back to the theater when I was like in my, I was, you know, more grown, and she would have me sneak in because she was like, I just know you'll tell me the truth.
I love it.
And listen, I mean, I loved her more than anything in the world, so I'm sure it was, but I would tell her the truth and I would give her whatever my honest opinion was and without a kind of filter. And Hamish does that for me as an actor, has always done that, you know, before we were together, when we were just scene partners. He always had these wonderful ideas that were, would sort of unlock something. I feel very seen by him as an actor, but I also feel really challenged by him. And so I knew that when I was having to wear more hats than I'd ever worn before, that I would feel I was right, that I would feel really great being directed by him. But then I still was able to, I mean, it was wonderful talking to Ed about it, you know, because he's a director and has directed films.
Yes, the amazing Ed Harris.
But he didn't have a co-director. I was like, how could you do it? Anyway, all to say, I love it. I loved it. We want to do it again. It was certainly a test, you know, where we were like, we might, even if we love this, we might just leave this and say, that was that, we've done that. We never want to do that particular thing again. But we did not feel that way. We're seeking it out. It just, you know, it really did whet our appetite to do more. And it's a wonderful thing because we are so similar in so many ways. We have, you know, when we first shot listed, like in just the roughest, like a long time ago, it was like we were inside one another's heads. We had the same shot list. And yet we have certain qualities that are so at odds and opposite. And I think that is always something to seek out on a set.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Want to have that total opposition. So you never, you know, in certain ways, so that you always feel like you're stretching things. You always feel like you're
not missing anything.
Not missing anything. Because if you know, if you're just looking in the one direction, but you really want to make sure that someone else is saying, oh, there's something, let's turn this stone over, what's under this rock and what's under this thing and what if we did, you know. So it was a really wonderful balance.
What can you tell us about Presumed Innocent ahead for you on Apple TV Plus? You play Dr. Liz Rush. It also stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Ruth Negga. Are you in production right now?
Or just about to finish.
What can you tell us? So excited to see Downtown Owl. Also excited to see this. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think I can tell you much.
Okay.
I love working. I love David Kelly. I love Matt Tinker. I love the director. They have these two wonderful directors on the show. Jake is amazing. Ruth is amazing. Everything I have is with them. And then one other, well, yeah, the large majority of what I have is with them. And they're just, you know, they're, I think it's exciting.
Looking forward to it. So you sort of touched on this before we wrap. If you have three small children, you have a step child as well, with your experience in directing and film and TV and theater, you know, personally speaking right now, where do you want to go with your career today? Where's the compass sort of pointing for you?
Gosh. You know, it's like, I really am, it's such a wild time in the world. And so I say this with a kind of deep acknowledgement of that. But I do feel just in my life, my family, like my day-to-day life, in my home and in my work, I do feel happier than I've felt, and it's all kind of happening at the same time. And so I can just say that I want more. I just want more. I don't feel, I just feel.
You said it earlier, there's sort of no itch to scratch right now.
Yeah, there's tremendous appetite and
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So let's wrap and talk a little bit about some of your current obsessions.
Oh, yes.
I hope we always end our podcast with some fun stuff. And I know, I feel like Lily, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. What are the things that are in high rotation in your life right now? What are you into?
The new National album.
Okay.
I mean, really high rotation. Like it's just on rotation. Yeah, literal rotation. I love it so much. I love them so much. I will never have enough. It will never stop speaking to like this part of me that is, I love them. That's in very high rotation. You know, I've gotten into, when we were editing the movie, I started baking, which is like a total new, when I talk to friends who know me, they're like, what are you talking about? No, it's really like I'm saying the craziest thing. But I got sort of obsessed with baking.
What have you perfected? Because I'm not a baker too, but like I did make this like gluten-free pumpkin muffin during the pandemic that like I've never baked before. And I'm suddenly like making these muffins. What have you perfected in your baking?
That sounds incredible.
It's a really good recipe, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do try, like, I'm not a big, which probably said, this is bad. I've never thought about this. It actually kind of says a lot about me. Because it makes sense. And I know a lot of, you know, they're like, this is what I can make this with my eyes closed. I sort of want to make things like once or twice. And then I want.
Oh, like a little novelty baking moments. You're enjoying novelty baking moments.
Yeah. And then I know, I'm like, I can come back to this.
I love that.
But I really love like fucking up. Like I love the getting the new recipe where it's like high risk because I haven't made it before. I don't know what I'm doing. And there's like a high likelihood that it's all going to go to shit. But then when it doesn't, the thrill of that,
I love that.
Is like worth it. So yeah, I'm really like, I'm always, I get very excited now when people send me a new recipe. And if it looks hard, like I made some crazy thing for Thanksgiving. It was like a cranberry lime pie, but you really had to like make a curd and which to an avid baker is, they're like, yeah, make a curd, like that's the easiest thing.
Yeah, and it's like it's one of those recipes that has like three sub recipes in it, you know.
Oh yeah, like yeah. The kitchen looks insane. There are so many things cooking at once. Yeah. Like things could burn at
any right moment. There's no such thing as clean up as you go, right?
Yeah, no way. But yeah, I love to like, and then, you know, or when they're like, and then you do this, and is some term. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. What? I don't even know what that term is. So I have to look up the term. I mean, I'm really, it's very self-taught. Although my mom, she was an amazing cook. She baked too, but she was really an incredible cook. And some of that is yeah, coming back to me now as I'm doing this stuff.
Yeah. You're channeling her. What else is on your list? Like we're at number three.
Yeah. Kate is always Kate, the K-H-A-I-T-E. It really always, you know, I'll buy the thing that I might feel guilty in the moment about buying. And then I swiftly don't feel guilty because I wear it every single day.
It's paying for itself. I'm wearing it all
it
the
really
time.
It really is.
Yeah.
I wear this a lot. This is Jane Mayle, my friend.
I was going to say, I love that.
This is Jane Mayle too. She makes such beautiful pieces, Maison Mayle. I'm actually so excited because where I'm staying in New York when I go is very close to her shop. She's the most beautiful.
I just realized she has a shop again.
Yeah,
like you're welcome. It went away, right? And then the other day I was walking by where you're talking about and I was like, oh, yep. We're back. Great.
The old one was in Nolita. That's not there anymore. There's the new one. It's so beautiful. She's often in there. She's very beautiful and amazing. And I love her pieces. I love the Frankie shop, which actually from doing this shoot.
God, that's a great suit.
I didn't own anything from the Frankie shop. And then I went and bought that suit, the pink one. I
like, oh, ordered good.
Because it was so, I was perfect.
That's a great suit. That's another store I walk by here in New York all the time. And they have great pieces, like great, great, great pieces.
The Row is always just the best. I love The Row. That's another one like you never regret, but ever regret buying it because it's perfect. And Co makes such beautiful pieces. Dries, I'm obsessed.
Dries is my favorite designer of all time.
Just obsessed. Yeah. So beautiful. I love Gucci Westman. I love her makeup. It's so beautiful. Like the packaging is so beautiful. The product is so beautiful. It's also like really curated. So I get very
overwhelmed. Very curated. It's very curated.
So good. And the blush, the everything is it, but it, but I love that there is, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't, there's 200 shades. I don't know.
Right, the line's too big. Yeah.
Yeah, you just trust her. And so, you know, like, I think I have them all and I wear them all because they're all wonderful. And Shani Darden is my friend and a genius, and everything she makes, I buy and use. And I've been using that Virtue and loving it. Oh, and also, do you know Virtue, V-I-R-T-U-E?
No.
A Dear Abergel.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. He's amazing. And I work with him sometimes. And he introduced me to it. It's his line and I love it. And then I also love that I just got the oil from Rose. Is it Rose or Roz? It's R-O-Z.
Yeah, it's Mara Rozek.
Yeah, it's Mara Rozek. Oh, so it's probably Rose.
Yeah.
Let's say it right. Yeah. That's really good.
Everyone loves that oil. Everyone.
That oil is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
What else?
I think you have a lot on your list here. If there's anything that you want to include.
Oh, we are doing, we're finally doing stuff with our house and working with this amazing designer named Allison Koch. And
oh, that's so exciting. A renovation.
We're like, I just went into Nikki Kehoe with her and then Pearson Ward they have their shop, right? So yeah, everything. But you just sort of like Nikki Kehoe, you can't even, it's just, you just want, and I felt the same way going into Emily's shop where you just want to stay in there. It's like being around books. You're like, this is, and the space isn't too big.
Yeah, it's like eye candy and comforting and all those things.
I asked her if I could come. I was like, would you mind if I, because this is 5 minutes from my house, can I just come here with my laptop and sit on the couch and sort of greet people? Because I have a lot of small kids at home and I have a lot of work I need to get done.
I love that. Do you miss living in New York?
I miss it so much. Yeah, I do miss it.
Very different where you are, but
it is.
Yeah. But you're here all the time, I would think. Sounds like it.
We are, and more and more and more, and we will be more and more. Yeah.
Good.
Sure, you know, we'll eventually move back or switch our primary location.
Yeah.
From, you know, whatever. It's all, it. Yeah.
Lily, it was so great to talk to you.
It was
an honor and a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Everyone can see you currently in Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, in Love and Death, streaming on HBO Max, and then, of course, Downtown Owl.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.